And now,
Capital 263.
Welcome to Politics and Beyond on Capital 263. My name is Christopher Farai Charamba.
My name is Upenyu the Ham Makoni Matenga.
Upenyu the what?
My name is Tawanda Eni.
The Ham.
Sorry. Carry on, Tawanda. I'm sorry.
My name is Tawanda Henry BT, and yeah, welcome. Wait, no, wait. Upenyu, what was that?
I'm in the sandwich.
Oh, right.
So Chris is the bread. You're the bread. I'm the ham.
All right. Okay. And welcome to the best political podcast, or should I say food podcast. And yeah, this is us. We're recording on Saturday, the 3rd of February. And let me just get out of the gate straight up and say yesterday was a very important day. Happy birthday to Nero, a.k.a. Danyara.
Nelson Chamisa.
Cobra. Cobra. King Cobra. Cobra.
Mm-hmm. We're a bit silly, guys, but
wait, what do you mean it was a very important day? Important for Neroka?
Yeah, for Neroka.
Oh, okay.
For the whole country, guys. Well, this is a landmark.
Okay. The vice president of opposition
Asia,
party.
I think we should be popping that day.
Wow. You guys rate him so highly. But yes, this is our opposition episode. Yay! Yasouya. Murune
Murito.
There's actually a lot happening in the opposition. We have new political parties as well. So we're going to speak about the opposition, the main opposition, MDC, and then we'll talk about the others. The fringe political parties. Yeah.
I know some people get upset
because like Kathy will get upset about us calling BZA a fringe party. Titch will get upset about us calling APA a fringe political party, but
I think Matty Beleland will be upset about us calling APA a fringe political party.
Is he big
but
in that
you know
area?
The thing is, guys, just Google Zimbabwe opposition party and see what comes up. That should tell you all you need to know.
I mean, it's true. When we speak about the opposition to Tawara MTC, we must just get that straight. Even though there are, what, 75 now? I saw another tweet saying 89 political parties in Zimbabwe. I mean, no,
yeah.
That's a plurality and a diversity of voices then, isn't that? Doesn't that indicate that?
No, I don't think so, because I don't think the ideologies differ.
You see, no problem. Yeah, Tango Wanda, but we're saying the same thing.
Isn't that what Dr. Magaisa always says? Is if you put three Zimbabweans in a room, you end up with four political parties and three churches.
So if we look at the MDC and all its, you know, different breakaways, so we start with MDC in 99, right? Mm-hmm. And then
yes.
Welshman broke away at some point.
MDC in 99 was obviously formed after the People's Working Convention.
Yeah.
And so it started, yeah, I think essentially for the no vote for that constitution.
Constitution, yeah.
I'm forgetting which section it was. That's when the MDC was formed, yes?
Then they went to the 2002 elections.
Yes.
And then the 2005 elections.
Yes.
And the 2005 presidential elections, that's when there was a split where Welshmen broke off.
Yes, because of the issue of the Senate.
Right. So it was an internal issue, not an ideological issue.
It was an ideological issue.
Well, I mean,
internal.
They were both.
The Well, but switching you from a single House of Parliament to a jewel to a bike to a parliament to a parliament in a central to a park bicameral
system, of, right?
That was an ideological issue. It was because what it essentially did was by creating proportional representation in seats or for the senators' seats, you were diluting the influence of the MDC in urban areas, their ability to govern. That's was the argument of Welshman's side. The other argument was that it gives more. The political argument from the MDC side is that it essentially is a political consideration. You create more positions, you have a stronger party because more people are now in positions of influence. That was the actual another point of contention was having a certain amount of chiefs as members of Senate. Mm-hmm. I don't think Walshman wanted that, but it was an ideological argument at the end of the day.
But both parties remain.
And ZANU-PF said, we don't care. That's what we're doing.
Yeah, yeah, but
so that's what happened.
But we're focusing on opposition here. But both parties mm-hmm. remained social democrats, right? If we were going to look at other issues, when we talk about the economy, when we talk about things like taxes, things of certain policies, their policies would have been in line. The disagreement was over this Senate issue.
Yeah, but Chris, I agree that that's fact. That's a factual.
I'm just looking at, obviously there are certain disagreements, but which lead to breakaways. Without a disagreement, there wouldn't be a breakaway. But the core ideology remains consistent, is what I'm getting at.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Then after, mm-hmm. so then you go, when was the next breakaway? Not 2008, was there a breakaway?
Mm-mm.
Nope.
No, okay. There wasn't.
2013...
2013 was nope. 2014.
2014 was when you had
MDC renewal.
MDC renewal, which became PDP. Which also had. Did Mangoma leave with renewal and then form his own thing, or did he?
Yeah. Okay. So Mangoma left with renewal. Then they formed PDP, and then he left PDP before the Congress and formed his own thing.
Okay. Cool.
From.
What,
so he's a faction of a faction.
what were the reasons for the renewal breakaway?
I mean, it's in the name, MDC Renewal. The party was calling for a renewal of the people in renewal were calling for a renewal of the leadership of the party.
So it was a leadership issue, not specifically. Yeah,
it was a leadership issue
in terms of and the core ideas. That MDC stands.
No. It was. I mean, see, this is the thing: is that one can ask about what the core ideas of the party, because at that time the party had become so personality centric that mm-hmm. when you are calling for a leadership renewal, are you not essentially calling for a renewal of? And it says MDC renewal is a renewal of the whole party, which includes. The basic ideology of the party. But mm-hmm. at the same time, you can't take away from the fact that the leaders of MDC Renewal, Elton Mangoma and Tendai Biti, were so instrumental in the actual ideology of the MDC from formation
mm-hmm.
that you... We must then separate ideology from implementation of that ideology. So they were calling for a change of the implementation of the ideology or a going back to basics and back to why the party was formed mm-hmm. in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Complete agreement with that train of thought.
Mm-hmm.
I think where I was going ultimately was that you have these different breakaways from the MDC, but if we come down to it, there are more internal issues than a complete differing from each other in terms of what it is they actually stand for. Obviously, they are issues of personality politics. There are issues of, you know, certain structural issues. But really, the mm-hmm. MDC, in its different formations, if you ask them what they stand for, what they believe in, many of those core ideologies remain the same.
Yes.
Yes. And now I've lost where I was going because we went too long. on this explanatory.
That's what you were saying.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I was kind of like, oh, yeah, because we were talking about the many of how many they are, and we're just looking at the fact that a lot of them are the same. And And in terms of, so now we look at this alliance, Tashika Pa Alliance stage, and the issues with the alliance are, again, to do with the structure and the leadership and those.
So we're talking about MDC Alliance now, yeah?
Yes, we're talking about the MDC Alliance. Dopa Tashikaka, after all the breakaways.
I would like to give Upenyu a moment now to have her say about the MDC Alliance before.
Well, I mean, it's a non-factor. It's not the main actor. So, Patianga is at Yashika. I've got my script. Don't worry. Patianga. Guys, at Yashika. Keep going.
Wow.
Okay, okay. Anyway, Tashika Pa Alliance. Yeah.
Yeah, so Tashika Pa Alliance. Let's all agree that the alliance at the core is the same. They believe in the same thing. And a huge factor of what they wanted, of what they believed in, was that Mugabe must go, right? And now he's gone.
Yes.
That was not of their doing, though they did play a part. It was, you know, ZANU-PF's internal squabbles. We all know that. So in terms of the alliance and going into this election that is a few months away, they don't seem organized to me. They are mad squabbles within them. I mean, the coupe situation is well known. Gutu and BT taking on each other in one constituency.
Those are things we should talk about, but
Give the summary.
I think what I'm not going to do this episode is I'm not going to be the defender of the opposition.
Mm-hmm.
But what mischaracterization you perhaps have is, because their slogan was Mugabe must go, that doesn't mean that's all that they had to offer. So you just said, Kuti, basically that's what brought them together. And I think if what we're looking at as the alliance right now, you have essentially Changirai, you have Welshman, you have BT, you have Chamisa, you have Monzora, you have all these people back in the same room together. So I mean, I know there's other parties in the alliance, but essentially what you are seeing is the original MDC back together in some form of shape. And that's, I think, really what the alliance is. And that's not to take away from the other parties that are adding their voices or their things to this. But I think that's why, first of all, you don't see Namai Mujuru or all these other guys joining the alliance. But what you see with the MDC alliance is essentially... is really, it's in the name, it's just the MDCs in their various forms coming back together. It's sort of like if the ANC split into the South African Communist Party again, and then those other guys, you know, when the ANC came together, imagine if they split right now, and, you know, Kosati Tukut's people there, and, you know, like all the different various actual ideological groupings within the ANC, or political groupings within the ANC split and then eventually came back together for an electoral pact, which is what it is. So my point is, when we speak of MDC Alliance, we're essentially speaking of the MDC in its original form. We're speaking of what you could almost call MDC 99. That's what the alliance is.
But the MDC Alliance is falling short of what MDC was when I was a card carrying member of the MDC when it formed in 1999.
Yeah.
and what it was in 2005, what it was in, you know, even in 2008 and 2009. This MDC alliance, for some reason, even with all of the people, the original people who sat at that first table and said, you know what, Mugabe must go, it's failing to form Voltron. The parts are not coming together. God knows where the lion is. No one knows where the head is. It's just, it's not gelling. You know, it's disparate parts. I understand there's still bickering about who's going to contest. I mean, why is it an issue for Tendai Biti to contest in Harare East? He's been there since. If he's been there, then it shouldn't be a discussion. And yet it is a discussion. And that for me is problematic. Could he, if your entity, if the thing, if the party cannot recreate or create a new narrative other than Mugabe must go, if it's, I mean, the MDC is rooted in the trade unions. How is it that it has become so dissociated from the people's wants and needs, bread and butter issues? Because let's face it, as ordinary people, I really don't care who's president. I just want to know there's money. When I go to the bank, my money can come out. And when I go to the shops, I can afford to buy what I need. So if the MDC is so divorced from the bread and butter issues of the people, then it is an ideological problem. Because maybe the ideology that we say we are, you know, is our ideology is not actually our ideology. You know, maybe we're practicing the politics of greed. Maybe we're practicing the politics of power. But the thing is, if you don't have power, it doesn't make sense to fight for it, does it? Amongst yourselves, especially.
Chris, do you have any response before I go?
What I want to know is, what is the issue that the MDC is taking forward currently? Obviously, for a lot of us, we didn't expect the coup, not a coup, to happen. No one can say that, you know, they saw it coming. But it happened, and we are now moving forward. We're going towards the next election. The MDC has a president who has cancer.
Colon cancer.
And
which is very aggressive.
And we don't know. First, we don't know when the election will be held. We don't know if he'll be fit enough to stand in that election. By all intents and purposes, we wish him well. We hope that he recovers. But there is no clarity over that issue. There's no clarity over the seats issue. So my biggest question right now is, as the opposition, what are their issues? What do they, you know, what is it that they're standing for? And how are they driving their agenda forward? Are they seriously taking Tsvangirai to the election? And I think it's a big concern. I honestly think that's one of the major concerns.
But Wavunza Muvunza Wakawanda, and then there's also a pay news point.
Yeah.
And I'm speaking for the opposition.
Yeah, let me just say, I don't expect you to speak for the opposition. These are just some of the thoughts that are out there, or that I have.
So from where I'm standing, and I can only go from personal conversations I have with my father. I can only go from conversations I have with Ana Chamisa and Ana Solo and these people. And I understand it's very rarefied air that, you know, you can speak with someone who is in a leadership position and they'll tell you what they want to do and what's actually happening are very different things. Mm. But even from the rally, and I think the message that they're carrying on is that, yes, Mugabe, but ZANU-PF Ichiripo, ZANU-PF is still here, and the only people that can bring true change to Zimbabwe is the MDC. And that's the message that they've taken to the people when they were in Mutare. That's the message that they took to the people in Epworth when they started. Was it Epworth? Yeah, I think it was Epworth. But I think that's the message that these rallies, I think you saw the list that these rallies are going to be taking to people, the alliance rallies, is that, yes, Mugabe, but we're still being led by the same people. And I think it's obviously a modification on the Mugabe must go mantra. But I think at the end of the day, it's ZANU-PF must go in terms of what they're offering the people, policy positions that they've stated, without releasing a manifesto, is that the first thing they'll do is drop the bond note and join the Rand Monetary Union. That's a economic thing. And then obviously they speak in more detail about, about power and about when it comes to those individual things, which I don't have access to right now.
And
I'm not
going
to repeat verbatim. But in terms of like actual, the main policy issue is Nyayemar. And I think that's what they're running with is about the sheets.
The $15 billion.
No, not the $15 billion.
But that statement was offside.
No, but the thing is, he said it. He said it.
Yeah,
no, he said it. I don't have an explanation for you, and he didn't have an explanation for me.
It was completely offside. I mean, really, when we take over, we're going to have $15 billion. From where?
And from Trump. Who? From Trump.
Yeah, it's
so Trump is co-signing $15 billion for a shithole country. Because, I mean, does Nelson Chamisa not watch TV? Does he not have a phone? Does he not speak to people?
I'm not Nelson Chamisa.
We'll have to get Nelson Chamisa on to explain his $15 billion comments.
You know the thing that, and this is going to sound like spin, but it's actually quite an interesting thing that I noticed is the opposition is held to a much higher standard, as they should be, than any other, the MDC rather, is held to a much higher standard, as they should be, than any other political party. Or maybe I feel it more than anyone else because of personal interests.
I don't think
that $15 billion statement was as ridiculous as, you know, some other things that have been said. I think it was equally within the realm of the more crazy political statements that we've heard in the recent last since November, really. I'm not trying to excuse it. It's an interesting thing, but talking about, let's actually get into the nitty gritty about the actual alliance and how the alliance is working, because I think that's what people are more interested in. We spoke about seats, about BT and Gutu in Harare East as the most public one, but there's more seat issues.
Mm.
They've given themselves a deadline until February the 9th to finalize the seats issue. And my understanding is that there's negotiations ongoing right now, as however negotiations should happen or whatever. But that's my understanding. Is just from a message that was sent out on the MDC groups that I'm on, is that it's nothing to worry about right now because the negotiations are finalized on the 9th of February. And yeah, so.
But isn't this why there should be primary? I mean, you know, this doesn't happen in a vacuum. There's, and yes, I get it. You all want to work together, et cetera, et cetera. But isn't this why there should be primary elections within the party so that BT and Gutu can stand against each other before the people who we've all been talking about but leaving out of the conversation? And say, okay, who do you want to represent you from MDC in parliament? And then they pick, rather than it being a negotiation between, you know, BT and Gutu. Van Wachano Pinda Papi.
See, the thing is, this is Zwelu Tukudama primary. I don't think that's a problem on a certain side. The argument against primaries, of course, is that it's divisive. It's divisive. You are trying to form an alliance. If you have primary elections, the MDC candidates and some PDP candidates will win all those elections. How do you control who votes? For example, in Harare East, right, is mm-hmm. You have BT and you have Gutu there. BT was essentially the last MP there, so the councillors are people he ran with. So one could argue could maybe Mastrakshe Muharare East Ndiyake. So who accredits, who chooses who votes and who doesn't? Let's say then Obed Gudu has, you know, 500 people from Tafaro or his neighborhood. How do we know? Because the MDC hasn't sold, you know, cards in years, and PDP, to my knowledge, has never sold party cards. TZ, Transform Zimbabwe, has never sold party cards. So who decides who's accredited? Who decides who's voting in these primaries?
That points to a lot of structural issues within within the opposition.
It's an alliance. Political party. It's an alliance.
No, no, no.
It's an alliance, guys.
I'm not talking about the alliance. I'm talking about within opposition political parties, because you should generally have a clear indication of where your members are. And who your members are. First of who your members are and where they are, I think. You should be able to have the means to say, well, in this neighborhood we have so many so and so registered members.
What I'm saying, Chris, is that those things are there. If ininda gadaumutsa wuti ndomutsa structure kuwarare East Mangwana, to message who no message you kauzani mdara storage a meeting. Kauzani who messages people, so you have an idea of who your structures are. My point now is not so much about do the structures exist. The structures exist. How do you then decide who is accredited for a primary election?
Well, if the structures,
it's not so much a.
No, but if the structures are this and you have registered party members, then those are the party members who vote in the primary.
Mm-hmm.
No.
You can't say the structure exists and then say how do you get the people to facilitate a primary election?
Because what that really means is that there is no structure.
Because it's the same thing when you then pit MDC against ZANU-PF, or actually anybody, or even an independent candidate, and then because you still can't count on those people to vote for you, is what you're saying in essence. If they can't pick between two of your candidates, then they can't pick between you and somebody else. And maybe that's actually the weakness with the MDC alliance. You don't even are they coming? Are they going? Who's voting for them? Who's not voting for them? Who's campaigning for them? Who's not campaigning for them? All we know is that there's those nine people around the table. We're not sure.
No, I'm trying to explain from a realistic perspective the structures of most political parties in the country. The majority of people that vote ZANU-PF, ZANU-PF doesn't have 5 or 3 million card-carrying members in the country.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. No. That's fine. But
what I'm saying is, if there's a ZANU-PF district meeting right now, what will happen is the MP will call his district chairperson, say, chairperson, Rongaiwano. Chairperson will go to the different SAU leaders and say, guys, messen dogona on 50, dogona on 50, dogona on 50. That's how you get the SAU leaders walking through the street saying, my point is, the structure exists. So you've got your district, you've got your chair, you've got your SAU. That there is clear. My point now is, Kuti, how many people can you coerce? And the thing is, you see it with Mapungwe, you see it with ZANU-PF meetings, is that you have a lot of stories, if you know, about people who are just said Handeku meeting, right? Those people who are saying Handeku meeting are cell leaders, are district leaders, and those structure racho. That's in existence. It's Munano Garamurain. You know that person.
Henry, I understand all of that. Where I'm going from is, when it comes to primaries, though, it's the card-carrying members who vote in primaries. So not talking about going to meetings, we're not talking about an actual election or all of those things, just the primaries. You should be able to say, within Chisipite we have 100 people who live there. Those 100 people should be able to come in and vote and decide on who their candidate for that area is going to be in a primary election. A primary election doesn't have to have 10,000 people.
But it doesn't have to be the card-carrying members either. If you have cell leaders in the structure, and a partial structure exists, if there's a cell leader in Chisipiti, that cell leader can look at, amongst the people that they're responsible for or who they talk to, okay, this is a genuine MDC person, this is a genuine MDC person, pick 50, let's go vote in the primary elections. It's not that hard.
Shandruguti Upenyu, and I understand you guys were speaking about a hypothetical. What I'm trying to say is, who then decides that those 50 people are genuine? Because you can't have a cell leader. You can't have me, who's in structure erabiti, saying, Guti, nindine 1,500, we're not going to mavugu. Right? who then independently then verifies kuti that is a those are legit 1,500 because maybe in one wabiti ane mari yakawanda maybe anogona kubadira chi 1,500 kuti awe ku meeting so he can then rig the primary. And this is not a national election, is what independent mechanism do you have to monitor those?
Fair
and
enough.
My point is, are you going to be able to set up a mechanism in such a short time that will what that will be easily accepted by everyone?
I think,
and that's why a primary, it's not necessarily, it's got nothing to do with all of this. Like, those are all fair and fine points. All I'm saying is, ultimately, you're bringing people together, right? You're having people negotiate an alliance. You're having people negotiate things. Now, do you want them, what scenario do you foresee realistically, guys? And I'm asking you guys honestly, and in any situation, in any scenario, what situation do you see where you have seven this different parties coming together and amongst themselves agreeing on a mechanism for a primary election that will favor the strongest party or the party that's already been in power for the longest? And what then reason do you have? Is like, if you're Transform Zimbabwe, right? At the end of the day, saying, can I share you my primary? Better to go in the election, chair, tungo jigewe koko futhi.
But
right.
So you see, the my thing question, is, it's you know, I understand all that. And first, I think they've left it too late, even if they wanted to.
The alliance has
been in discussion from early last year. These are some of the things that they should have sat down and ironed out quite early on. Fair enough, they didn't. Mm-hmm. We're now a few months before the election, and I completely agree. There's no time for any of that. Secondly, it really does, you know, beg the question of, will you put someone where Transform Zimbabwe, but will just the backing of them being part of the alliance guarantee or make their standing better? Maybe it will, maybe it don't. I don't know.
Especially if you can't trust each other to hold the primary. I mean, I'm going to keep
you,
coming
please.
Back
There's
to this.
No one
but especially if you can't
trust each other. Let's not be naive.
No, fair enough.
I mean,
no, come on.
Okay,
come on.
Okay,
it's not a trust
fine.
Thing.
It's fair enough.
Let's, I don't like how.
if then PDP throws its weight behind ZANU-PF because they have a deal now for a cabinet seat in the even within the framework of the alliance, if you cannot trust each other to hold a primary election that is free enough and fair enough, right, because that seems to be the standard of this country these days, then you can't trust each other, Kuti, even if Tendai Biti goes and stands behind the PISA president and says, we are in the alliance together, you can't trust. You don't know how many people even support you within that particular constituency or that ward.
I mean, I get it from the sense that if in this BT situation, and we're going to use them as the example because they're the ones that have come out, if they then decide on Tendai BT, what happens to Wagutu? Because he does have his people there. I think that's where the risk is that, and I suppose the risk would happen even if you did have a primary, but you're going to have in some areas imposition of candidates. And once that has happened, I mean, it'll be agreed at the high level. But if I'm disgruntled, I can really go to my 50 or 100 or whoever it is supporters and say, well, don't vote. Because it seems that this, again, we've spoken about it, but there's a lot of personal issues and people putting their persons first before they put the party first. So I don't know how they're going to work it out. And this is where I think the biggest concerns and issues are around the whole choosing of candidates and how that goes forward. Definitely interested in seeing how this Harare East one plays out, because I think it's going to set the tone for a lot of the other ones where there might be contentious issues following. Just to get your opinion, though, how do you think the MDC will do in the elections?
Poorly.
I think the presidential election is obviously they're going to do quite poorly in the presidential election. The real question is, what kind of knock-on effect does that have down the ballot? Because I think that at the moment, what people don't realize is that ZANU-PF structures as well aren't all in order. I think that this factionalism has had a much larger effect at the grassroots level than people give it credit for. And also the tribal issues and where the power base has moved from Mashonaland, the Mashonaland provinces, to Manicaland and Masvingo. So I think there seems to be one. And for the opposition, I just don't know how much of the down ballot voting will have as an effect on the election. But I think that they won't win the presidential election, but parliament and I think anyone who thinks differently is probably underestimating what's happening now, because I don't know, maybe Chris, you can give us more insight. I genuinely believe that this factionalism has had a much deeper impact than people give it credit for.
So some of the conversations I've been having with people over the last few weeks is that I definitely see ZANU-PF's factional issues happening post the election. In this election, I think they will vote presidential, they'll definitely vote one way. Obviously, it's not clear how the different provinces are set up, what the situation is there. So I think the opposition has a shot in terms of taking down the supermajority that ZANU-PF has. But that depends a lot on them and a lot on them getting their candidates out. And it would be wise for them to have their candidates out before ZANU-PF does, because it gives you time to, especially in this alliance coalition situation, it gives you time to solidify around your people and make sure that everyone is carrying the same message rather than do it a bit later. But I completely agree. I think in terms of the parliamentary seats, council seats, Senate seats and all of that, they have a better shot than the presidential. I wonder if they change their candidate, how they would perform. I think it would give them a bit of a boost, depending on who the candidate
in
is.
In Parliament, yeah?
No.
In Parliament.
In Parliament.
Because the thing is, the down vote, the down ballot vote is what I'm worried about. Because I don't think Nero or anyone right now could really beat ED, because, frankly, the ED is not going to lose an election not because people are going to vote for him. Even if people don't vote for him, he's not going to refuse. He's not going to allow himself to lose that election. These guys didn't take power from the previous government to lose an election. So whatever happens, if someone actually could challenge and win genuinely, then we'll see. We'll go back to 2008. But I don't see ED losing an election, whatever the case is.
I'll put it out there and say I genuinely think that he will win the election. And that's... that's going to be based on a number of factors. It won't be a full out win. I think it would be very close. But again, it depends on who the candidate he's running up against. If he goes up against Tsvangirai, I think he'll win the election and there'd be very little of a shadow of a doubt. If they change the candidate and they do so strategically, then it could be a lot bigger
challenge. Who is a strategic candidate for you? Just say it.
The thing is, I want to say Nelson. I really do. I think he'd put up a good fight. But I don't know if they have the time to whip up that. I think if you were to announce tomorrow, there'd be a lot of hype. And it's capitalizing on that hype and moving forward with that hype all the way, sustaining that hype all the way to the election. That would be interesting. If they do it now, I think they have time. If they leave it, then I just don't think it'll be enough time for them to whip up all of that support.
But I don't, you're right. If they did do it now, and if they did come together and form Voltron, they have a chance. But the way, I mean, we've just come from talking about structures, and we've just come from talking about, you know, the alliance deciding deciding who's going to run where. If those things aren't in place, it's not likely that any of the disparate entities within the alliance are going to support Chamisa or any other person other than Morgan Tsvangirai for president, which I think is a terrible quagmire to be in. Not for the MDC alliance or the people in it, but particularly for the people of Zimbabwe, because the whole point of an opposition is to give us a viable alternative, which currently we don't have. So we have to deal, we have to play the hand that's been dealt to us, and that is ED. I agree with you about ED winning the election. I don't think he's trying to lose it, but I also think he's trying to win it in as credible a manner as possible. But if you're running a race against yourself,
I think one of Henry, you mentioned earlier that, you know, people give the MDC a harder time than they do anyone else, and I suppose the anyone else you're referring to is ZANU-PF. What I think it is people generally expect better of the MDC and the opposition. So one of the things that really disappointed, and I'll speak for myself, really disappointed me was that after 2013, Tsvangirai didn't step down. They didn't have this leadership renewal, to use the word, because you genuinely hope that the MDC would be better than ZANU-PF. And what it showed, yeah, they'll say all the people wanted and all sorts of things that they will use to justify it. But at the end of the day, it mirrored a lot of what people did not want. Or I'll speak for myself again. A lot of what I wouldn't want. And this is where the problems are, is that, you know, you again, it's much of the same. You have a leader who is ill, and there is no clarity around what is going to happen next. Yes, everyone says, oh, it will follow the processes and, you know, it will go to a conference or a congress and things like that. But it's all things that we've heard before, and we've heard before from ZANU-PF. So I think that, for me, is where the issue lies, is that you really would want them to be better and expect better of them, which they haven't delivered.
I agree. Just to backtrack in terms of changing a leader in time, me, I'm a student of history, and historically speaking, the MDC was founded on the 11th of September in 1999, right? Mm-hmm. The main reason they were founded, amongst other things, their first electoral contest was the referendum, mm-hmm. which was held in February of 2000. Mm-hmm. And they campaigned for the no vote, and Zimbabwe voted no. So they had 5 months to found a party and to campaign in the whole country. And they succeeded in what they were campaigning for at that time. Mm-hmm. So if in March they change a leader and the election is in August, that's 5 months for a leader to make an impact on the country. And history has shown us that 5 months can be enough. That's all I'm going to say on that.
I'm not naive, though.
I think context is a lot different in this situation.
I think if you're changing to a name that's not known, it's a very different, but you're changing to someone who's been in the party, who's been the youngest minister, someone who's been in the public face for as long as Tsvangirai. I don't think that in terms of name and brand recognition, Chamisa is, even Kumushe is unknown.
My issue isn't with Chamisa being president, it's the party together behind him, the alliance coming together behind him. That's where my issue lies. Because I've seen, hasn't he been having a thing with Gutu and another thing with Mudzuri within their own structures? It's not quite clear what Chamisa is doing, what Mudzuri is doing. We clearly don't know who's running for president. Seems to me like Tsvangirai is still holding on. And where does BT stand in this? Because the next person who is recognizable behind Tsvangirai, to be fair, is Tendai BT. Then Nelson Chamisa, in my mind anyway.
Maybe to never run.
So,
all I know,
these sound like personal
Henry, like I said,
rather than no. But let's
Henry.
All I'm saying,
the sooner they announce, the better for them. That's all I'm saying.
Of course, yes. we agree with that. But Upenyu, when Walshman left, right? And the Secretary General left with half of with the whole of Matabele and the whole structure. Again, in the structure, yes. The next election, they won less than 10 seats in that same province that he took, right? Yes. As split, as devastating as it was, and as much of a gift as it will be for ZANU-PF, won't kill the party. And at the end of the day, where the majority stays is where the vote will stay. And I think what you'll see in 2018 is wherever the alliance fields and wherever the main MDC has under the alliance banner fields, where the majority stays is where the votes are going to go. And I don't think, honestly speaking, I don't think any of the other smaller parties have any of a chance. I'm talking within the alliance. I'm sure in the independents, I'm sure Fadzi will do well in a constituency. I'm sure if Temba will do well in Norton. But for everyone else, to be fair, I don't really believe that where the MDC decides to go, and that's what I genuinely see. So I think on that note, maybe we can move on to the other parties. But yeah. I don't see it happening any other way. If they break off or whatever they do, they'll do it, and the MDC will definitely shed some seats. But I don't think that the biggest opposition party come after 2018 in Parliament will still be the MDC Alliance or the MDC in whatever form it's in.
I completely agree with that. MDC will remain the biggest opposition party regardless of what happens elsewhere.
With all those factional issues, at the end of the day, they come to naught, because wherever they decide to go, whatever happens within the party is where the votes are going to go.
But I don't think it's about MDC being the biggest opposition party. That's never going to be in doubt.
I agree.
It's going to be about, will MDC ever be the governing party? And in its current state, I don't see that happening. In its current state, and it's obviously, there's a lot of other issues around. We can talk about the militarization of the state. We can talk about whether we'll actually get free and fair elections. But as they are themselves currently, the way they function, the way they are constituted, they don't look like they are ready for the fight. That's just as far as I know.
Capital 263.
This episode ended up being longer than we anticipated, so we decided to split it. Stay tuned for part 2.